The Cubs have been very busy the last few weeks with player and coach acquisitions. On this week's episode, we're going to talk about John Lester, the biggest Cubs free agent signing since Soriano, and the biggest contract in club history. The Cubs made a lot of other moves, including trading for an all-star catcher, hiring a former Cub on the coaching staff, and hiring a former Cub in the front office. We will talk about these topics and more, and we'll let you know about a contest we're doing that you can enter to win two passes to Cubs Convention. It's Wednesday, December 10th, 2014, and you're listening to the 285th episode of the Ivy Envy Podcast. Hi, and thanks for downloading this week's episode of the Ivy Envy Podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I am joined through a Google Plus Hangout by the other two hosts of this podcast.
Hi, it's Andy.
And Kurt.
We typically record and post these episodes on Sunday evenings, and if you would like to watch the live video broadcast of these episodes, you can go to ivmv.com/live at 8:30 p.m. on Sunday evenings. You will probably, you've probably noticed that we did not have an episode this last Sunday. First off, I was in the hospital, and then we were going to, I really wanted to do an episode from me in the hospital. Like, I really wanted to do it.
Yeah, we could tell.
Nurses, like, holding the mic to your...
Yeah, and this might be a good time, guys, to also apologize for any pain med texts that you guys received. Anything that seemed out of character from me.
Well, I mean, you were just lewder than normal, so it wasn't that much different.
Normally, we have to worry about like kids being in the background and stuff. I thought like, oh, it'd be kind of fun if I'm in the hospital. You can hear like some beeping, like my IV machine goes off. That'd be kind of funny, and then. The night before that, there was a lady on my floor with Alzheimer's, and she would not stay like out of my room and like out of the hallway. And so then I realized, no, in the background, it would just be like one lady insisting that she go pick up her car and four nurses explaining to her that she doesn't have a car and she needs to go back to her room. So maybe that wouldn't have been very good podcasting.
Gold.
Yeah. I don't know. I could have gone off really well.
have her sit in and give her. I think we've had other people just kind of wander in and tell us their opinions on the Cubs. The C's.
Yeah, that's
of
happened a few times. Why not her?
It probably would have made about as much sense as the other times it's happened. So sorry for the delay. I was in the hospital from Sunday morning until Tuesday evening. We thought about recording last night, Tuesday night, but then it looked like John Lester would be making his decision soon. So we thought there's no point in doing an episode speculating on what John Lester might do when we could just wait a night and actually talk about what he did. So,
and that turned out to be a great decision.
It did. We planned it well. So, Kurt, tell us about the newest Cubs pitcher.
Well, I feel really silly because I did all these notes on Lester Strode because you put in the document, you just put Lester, and I got really confused, and so, you know, I'm completely unprepared, so I'm just gonna wing it on this one. Apparently, we're talking about John Lester.
Right, so as a podcast, I think we need to make room in our hearts for a second Lester. I don't know.
That's going to be tough to do.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyways, yeah, John Lester, as you know, breaking news, or if you don't know, breaking news, he signed with the Cubs 6 years, $155 million. Like Corey said, that's the biggest contract in Cubs history, so we can keep accusing them of being cheap. Let's just keep that ball rolling. And that makes him the second highest paid pitcher in baseball behind Clayton Kershaw. And so the contract details are, it's 6 years. And then after the 6 year, there's a vesting option for $25 million or a $10 million buyout. So the least amount he's going to make is the $155, but then potentially he could make $170 million out of this contract. And that vesting option triggers if he hits 400 innings in 2019 and 2020 combined, or he pitches 200 innings in 2020. So you can see it's kind of backloaded to make sure he's got some longevity and stays healthy. But at the minimum, he gets that $10 million buyout. And interestingly, he always also gets 25 hours of flights on a private jet. The deal includes a $30 million signing bonus that they'll pay out over the life of contract. And he also got a full no trade clause, which is something we thought, or at least was indicated, that this front office probably wouldn't do much of. But it shows you how much they really wanted him. I mean, they were all in on this. That was pretty obvious. The other contenders were Boston and San Francisco, it seemed like. There were other teams in and out of contention, but I think those were the most serious. And it just looks like the Cubs had the best offer. And it kind of highlighted how much Boston choked on their opportunity to keep him in Boston last year and or bring him back. It looks like they completely underestimated the free agent market on him. Because their offer to him in April was 4 years, $70 million, which is just laughable now, because he could potentially make $100 million more. And then their offer this time was 6 years, $135 million. So, you know, significantly under the Cubs.
I guess, especially with that most recent offer, I would guess just really banking on like a hometown discount type thing, you know, really hoping that he wanted to return to Boston, but...
That's one heck of a discount, man.
He indicated that he would take a home town discount, but I don't think it was that much.
Yeah.
I did see a muscle flex where some guy was like, one Boston fan was like, you said you would take a hometown discount. And then the flexor was like, he's from Tacoma, Washington, in all caps.
Amazing. So yeah, those are the contract details. I mean, this is definitely a big deal. I mean, I have to admit, the whole time I was a little bit cautiously optimistic. I think as most Cubs fans probably are, I kind of thought, you know, there's just a little voice in the back of your head that says it's not going to happen. But then it did.
Well, okay. So if you kind of had a thought that it might not happen, I did too, and it wasn't so much of you know, Epstein and Hoyer aren't going to be able to seal this deal. It was more of a, we don't really have enough to offer, you know, and it sounded like, from what I've read that Lester really wanted to, you know, he wanted it proven to him that the Cubs do want to win now. And I was kind of worried that would they be able to sell that to him? Because it's odd that like, a lot of us fans see that they want to win. I guess the now thing is kind of the relative term. Is it now like in the next 2 years or within that contract, or is it now like next year? But it's weird that like certain players, I mean, Jeff Samardzija, it seems like they don't really buy it, or they there's some doubt there. And so that's what made me nervous. It wasn't that the Cubs weren't going to offer, you know, as much. It seems like they were way more interested in and willing to overpay for Lester than they were Russell Martin, you know? And so it seemed like they really were going to do everything they could to not let Lester get away.
Well, and I think he fit all the check boxes for this front office. You know, they knew him from before when they were in Boston, and they know he's a high character guy. He's an innings eater. You know, he's all the things that they look for. And, you know, and I think the other advantage, so they have the advantage of knowing him. So I think they have that kind of upper hand in the negotiation of how to approach him. But they also, here's a guy that's already won a couple World Series. So not to say he doesn't want more, but this is a new challenge where they could say, look, you could come win the first one in Chicago, you know, in a long time. And so that's sort of a new challenge versus like another guy like Samardzija or even David Price, like that may be a harder sell,
right?
To kind of come prove it in Chicago and do it, be the first to do it in Chicago when you don't have one already. So,
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
but I mean, to think like this could sort of seal his, what's the word?
Legacy.
I'm on drugs too. Forget it.
Legacy.
Yeah, his legacy. There goes the drug guy.
That's right. I'm such a better communicator when I'm on drugs.
But yeah, so you know, if he could do that, I mean, it does sort of bump him up a few notches in the history department. So
yeah.
Please don't say history department. I have to think about that kind of thing all day.
Well, if you guys know, I would appreciate it if this was a humorless episode, because it hurts really bad when I laugh.
Oh no!
So let's
that's keep, asking. That's asking too much.
Let's keep this thing dry.
You have another pill there.
It's hard for me not to be naturally hilarious.
I have to laugh with my throat. I can't go any deeper than that, or it hurts.
Oh man, that sucks, man. I'm so
no, I'm all right.
Okay, so there's the contract side. I didn't start with the stats side because I assume that people listening to this have probably already looked up the Baseball Reference page and kind of given it the run through. But just some of the highlights, I guess, is this overall record in 9 years is 116-67 with the 3.58 ERA. Let's see. He's pitched 1,596 innings in those 9 years. So like I said, he's pitched a ton of innings. I mean, he's averaging over 200 since 2008. So he's been able to sort of stay healthy. I don't know. What else can we say?
Well, I mean, okay,
he's left-handed. If you didn't know that already.
Well, I think you raised a good point about him filling a lot of check boxes, you know, that it's good. They needed a veteran presence. And, you know, I think they still want an everyday veteran presence. But it's also good to have a veteran presence on this pitching staff that if you look at, you know, if you're looking at who our ace was before this week, you're looking at Arrieta, who is, you know, maybe not quite so young, but somewhat inexperienced. And the whole pitching staff from there on down is, you know, Edwin Jackson, I guess, is your veteran. And I'm not sure you want anybody taking any pointers from him right now. so I think that's a good point, but let's look at, what do you guys, think that this signing means as far as this off season goes? Like, how does that kind of set things up for this off season?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people have already talked about this kind of adds a little bit more urgency to the Cubs plan. I mean, sure, we have a lot of young players and the idea was that 2016 maybe might be the year where all those guys are playing together and they're playing well. And but it does sort of put some urgency. I mean, Lester has a nice long window of time with the Cubs here, but I think there's more pressure to compete in 2015 than there would have been without.
Yeah, because you want to try to. You don't want to. I don't want. I guess the wrong waste is the wrong word, but you don't want to. To burn a great performance here, because he's 30 years old right now. He's probably at the prime of his career, or potentially at the prime. And you know, the closer he gets to 36, the more he's going to fade. So you want to hit those winning seasons early in this contract, not later, or the whole time, preferably. But yeah, he's certainly more valuable as a 30, 31 year old pitcher than a 35, 36 year old. And I think the other sort of maybe off season thing that this does, just like the Joe Maddon deal, probably helped them get hit Lester, or at least maybe slightly influence that deal. This could influence other deals, because the recent rumor is the Cubs are still trying to get a power hitting left-handed, or not left-handed, but left fielder. And one of the names that pops up is Upton from the Braves, and he has a no trade clause for four teams, and one of those four teams is the Cubs. Well, you right. know, you sign a guy like Lester, does that change that sort of thing in the guy's mind where he'd say, okay, I'll waive my no trade clause because now it looks like they're actually going to do something.
Right.
So yeah, it can change deals, and I'm not, who knows if the Upton deal happens or doesn't, but it definitely changes things.
Well, and you
from
talk
a PR standpoint and the rest of the league, this is putting the rest of the league on notice that the Cubs are going for it now.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, you talked about Justin Upton. Other names that have been mentioned are Carlos Gonzalez, Matt Kemp, Carl Crawford, and maybe even Evan Longoria, which would be pretty interesting to see how that played out. But yeah, it's man, it's like this happened late last night or early this morning. And like as soon as it happened, I just thought like, you know, it was like a few seconds of, oh, my gosh, we got like the guy. You know, this is the first time in a long time that we've been able to get the guy. And then I thought, man, this is a front office too that isn't going to be like, okay, all right, well, we got our one guy, so let's see how this thing
see
works
what
out.
Happens.
Yeah, I mean, like they're just, I mean, this offseason and the trading deadline, you know, ever since this front office came in, even though up till now the deals that have been done have been, you know, a kind of long-term thing, you know, a lot of the sign and flip contracts and stuff like that, but like they've just been really active. And so it's like, man, this is going to be so much fun to watch because at the same time, they're kind of, I wouldn't say they're like Billy Bean unpredictable, but in some ways they are kind of unpredictable and you're not real sure.
Billy Bean with money.
Well, except Billy Bean, man, who knows what the heck he's doing right now. I can't figure that. I'm not a brilliant baseball mind, and I think even the brilliant minds are having a hard time figuring out what he's doing right now. Yeah. So I think as far as this off season goes, it's just, I think you're right. It adds a little bit of urgency to it in that they're not, I think every move we see in this off season pretty much is going to be moves that makes this team more competitive in 2015, you know?
Right. And I think it indicates too, like this isn't, enough, you know, we're going to talk a little bit later about other deals they've done, but this indicates that there are more deals to come, whether they be this winter, next year at the trade deadline, whatever that is, because you don't want Lester making $25 million and your total payroll $100 million.
Right.
The numbers just don't work out. So there are going to be more deals to come to sort of balance out that payroll, and payroll's going up, not down. So all those people that were bitching about the Cubs having huge market and no payroll, that's about to change.
One of the more vocal Ricketts is cheap people on Twitter said today, I guess I was wrong. Like, yeah, oh, no shit. Right.
Well, and I had a discussion today with a person at work that's a Cubs fan, and I said, like, we're to the point now where, like, a lot of the haters, okay, I have to start with saying they haven't won anything yet, but if we're just talking business and money haters,
right,
we're to the point where they're just flat wrong. Like, they're just, their arguments don't hold water. Ricketts aren't cheap. Epstein isn't cheap.
Right.
You know, so, but we'll see if it translates to
wins. You know,
well, and I think
on paper, they're certainly a lot better team now.
Right. Like I talked about on last week's episode, you know, when I was at the Cubs bloggers forum, you know, like it kind of came up, the idea that Ricketts is cheap and stuff. And Crane Kenny said that the money was made available to Epstein and he chose not to spend it. Well, he didn't spend it then so that he could do things like this. So he could make a big push in the year that it made the most amount of sense. And right. I'll be honest, like it actually kind of surprises me that it's happening this year. I think if you look at what the Cubs have as far as, like, I don't know, organizationally or institutionally, whatever. if you look at what they have, I think that, like, the natural timeline isn't 2015. You know, you've only called up all those young prospects. I don't think 2015 is the year that they're going to have the biggest impact. I think that's going to be maybe 2016. And so it kind of surprised me to see them almost move the timeline up a year and do it through free agency.
I was about to mention that. Isn't it pretty cool to think about what the Cubs potentially don't need to go for or add?
Right.
You know?
Right.
It's pretty incredible to think about, you know, how little they really do need to go after.
And when holes inevitably appear in certain positions, when a prospect doesn't turn out to be what we thought he was going to be, then they can address that situation at that time, you know, and that's a really nice thing too. And I don't know, this stuff's probably going to come up later. I seems like I maybe jotted this down in my notes, but by building up the farm system the way that they did, it isn't just like, okay, well, we have these prospects, and then we're going to plug in the holes in free agency, you know, with whoever those prospects don't work out or areas that were weak in, then we'll fill in with free agency, because they have such a plethora of talent in the minor leagues. They can go trade for somebody too. So, I mean, we're talking, you know, we hear them talking about, you know, that they would like to add a big bat yet in this offseason. It doesn't have to be a free agent. They've got enough, you know, they got enough prospects in the wallet that they can just pull out a Vogelbach, pull out a whoever, you know, just make it rain with prospects and get whoever they want.
Pull out a Vogelbach, dude. You got change for a Vogelbach.
But yeah, and too, to sort of further on your point of timeline, I think that this move had just as much to do with the guy as it did the timeline. I think they would agree with you about maybe next year was a better year to go after, but it being Lester and their familiarity with him and his durability or so, you know, his past durability. I think it really was like, hey, we've talked in the past, we've talked about how they won't overpay, and they probably did overpay a little bit, but that's how much they liked him from all those aspects. So I do think that, like all those other free agent pitchers coming next year are looking at this deal and like, you know, cha-ching. But the reality is the market drove this price up a little bit, along with a buyer who really wanted this particular free agent. So, right. So yeah, I think it had as much to do with Lester as it did with the timing of it all. So
don't you think this is the podcast episode that we have been waiting for since we started this podcast, you know, that like,
doesn't it feel weird though?
It does. It does feel weird that we're like, okay, guess like we legitimately are fans of a team that intends to compete and has the pieces to potentially compete. Like, I don't know. That's so exciting.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's completely sunk through my thick head yet, but
yeah,
I talk about it, but it's still not. I don't know. It's going to be exciting once baseball starts to happen. I guess that's what I'm waiting for.
Yeah. Okay, so staying on the Lester thing. So we kind of talked about what it meant as far as this offseason goes. Does it change your expectations for 2015? We've kind of touched on this, but are your expectations for 2015 different now than they were a week ago or 4 days ago?
Andy, if you say no, I'm going to reach through the screen and punch you.
Nah, not really.
about the same. I'm still pegging them at 74 wins.
No, really. I mean, it's been like a, it's been like a quite a declivity as, you know, they first go out and get Madden. And then, you know, from there, it's my expectations have been going up. You know, I should say proclivity, not declivity. Sorry. But
I was going to, I didn't want to call you out, Andy, but
I didn't want to correct you on the air.
But for sure. I mean, how couldn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think,
I haven't looked, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, I haven't I'm not much of a sabermetrics guy, so I haven't sat down and like added up all the war numbers and all that, but you know, just off the top of your head, they're just in the last couple of days, you know, and then throw in Madden, they're what, 10 wins better. Minimally, I think, and then you're hitting you're starting to approach the mid 80s, and then it's like, oh, well, now you're in contention for a wild card if you get a little bit better.
Well, and if you just get lucky, like the Cardinals do, where you know, where their run differential shows one thing and their record shows something way better. I would agree with you, Andy. I mean, after that, after the season ended, well, even before the season ended, we were all starting to look ahead to 2015. And there was talk then about the Cubs contending in 2015. Theo said it, you know, in that press conference right after the season ended. And I had just had a really hard time seeing that at that point, you know. And mm-hmm. I think here on the podcast, I said that if nothing changed, I had a hard time seeing that roster compete for the division. But man, so much has changed. And I think that when he said that, I think he kind of knew, and I think we knew as well. You know, it wasn't like he was saying, yep, we're competing with this roster. I think he said that's the goal for 2015. You're going to see moves mm-hmm. that reflect that goal. But yeah, so much has changed. And with the addition of Madden and Lester and Montero and other moves that are coming, I'm starting to see this team being one that can compete for the division. It's starting to look like it for me. I mean, I'm not going to say they're the favorite or anything like that, right. But it's like, yeah, it could happen. that's what I would say.
We've come a long way from Renteria finalizes his coaching staff news to where we're at now, you know?
Yeah.
So, and there are more moves to come, and you know, they've added two pitchers. I feel like they could use one more, but then again, I'm optimistic about some of the other guys that they have competing for that number five role. And I do think the team is, you know, could easily be a playoff team 2015.
Yeah. Well, Andy,
I'm still in the wild card camp.
Yeah. I think that's where I am too.
But I wouldn't, you know, because I think if you look at like where the division ended last year, so the Cardinals win it at 90 games. I don't think they're a 90 win team yet, but
come on, man. What not even with Montero back there framing up all the pitches just right.
Yeah, there's two wins. Right,
but you could also, but I mean, you could also see this team just catching fire. Yes. And I mean, just playing, being young and dumb and just play out of their minds. I mean, you could see that. I think it's not very likely to happen. I think it's much more likely to see Javier Baez swinging at every pitch and striking out a ton. Mm-hmm. I think we're more likely to see that. But, you know, I don't know. This is a really young, exciting group. Man, I wanted to go back to something you said, Andy. Oh, you talked about maybe adding another pitcher. I just saw on Twitter tonight that Epstein said that they will not be adding another, you know, $100 million pitcher.
Right, and that's not my expectation, especially for this season.
You know, I really wouldn't mind seeing him go out and get another. I mean, we're going to talk about Jason Hamill, but I wouldn't mind. Honestly, it would not bother me to see them bring in another guy to a one-year deal that they can flip again. You know?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. And they're going to have a lot of options then, you know, even if whether they do that or not, as far as who ends up in the rotation, but having those options, having more options, I think would only make the team stronger potentially.
But it's interesting, Corey, that you said sign a guy like that, that they could flip like sort of like automatically in that mindset. Whereas the reality is if you sign a guy like that and he performs, you're keeping him because you're in contention as opposed to trying to load up some prospects for him.
Right.
So hopefully, I think those days are over. But I do agree. I think a sort of like journeyman trying to build up his career again, guy could work. But hopefully, like I said, if he performs, he stays as opposed to see what you can get for him at the deadline.
I mean, you could also if you have a strength in the pitching staff and you don't really need him, then you could trade him to get, you know, in a deal to get something that is a weakness or something. But right. I kind of have my eye on Twitter here. I don't think we ever break in with like Twitter things, but I've got my phone sitting here and
breaking news.
Well, since we're like kind of excited, I guess, and kind of encouraged and excited for 2015, I'm seeing this retweet that Cubs Den retweeted, and it says St. Louis GM, which I think is that what Mozalek or whatever his name is. It says St. Louis GM on Cubs, and it says, quote, sleeping giant has awoken. I don't know. It's kind of cool to think that the Cardinals might be scared of us. That's the only reason I read that.
I don't think they're too worried yet, but
I don't know. I don't know. I'm so excited. I just want to say that I'm also on drugs, but I'm so excited.
It's like that Saved by the Bell episode. I'm so excited, Zach.
I'm also on drugs. Did he say that?
Well, she was.
That's true.
You guys ever had really good drugs when you're in the hospital?
No,
I've never been.
All right. Not so I've never been like under, you know, I've never had any teeth pulled or anything like that. I've never been under I was when I was four, I had my tonsils out, but I don't really remember that too much. So I was in a lot of pain and she quickly gave me something. It started with a D and I was like, okay. And she's like, yeah, this will make you feel a lot better. It's like, okay. And she like put it in through my IV. And man, I didn't know that that's how it was going to hit me. And so like, I thought I was having a panic attack. So like for a split second, I was like, you got to rip that IV out of your arm. Something crazy is happening right now. Like, this is not good. And like, I couldn't focus and like, I could not track conversations at all. I got kind of like irritated. My mom and dad and Tawny were in the room with me and I got kind of irritated and accused them of like, I thought they were talking about a junior high gym. And I was getting real irritated with them. But now, if we could have been recording then, it would have been a good episode.
Oh, man.
Bonus episode. Interview with Corey on drugs.
All right. Where are we at here? Well, I guess. Okay. Well, let's move on, I guess. Anything else you guys wanted to say about Lester?
No, other than I woke up this morning. I knew I was going to have the news one way or the other on my phone. Went and got my coffee, sat down, delayed checking my phone until I sat down with my coffee, and bam, there it was. It was a great morning.
I may or may not have texted you guys at like 2 a.m.
Yeah, you did.
I think I said, I hope your alarm or I hope your ringer's off.
Yeah, you did. But I didn't. I slept through it, so it didn't wake me up. But
you know what?
I did. That's the first thing I did. I could reach over and I picked up my phone and just kind of hit the home button. And there was Corey's text. So that was.
See,
I had to be quiet, though, because everybody else was still asleep. So.
If you were over on the other side of the bed just saying yes and pumping your fist, I don't know, laying over. See, I woke up at 2 o'clock because, guys, I have to use a urinal at night in my bed. I'm just laying it all out there tonight. And so I woke up because I had to go to the bathroom. And like as soon as I woke up, I like had to reach for my phone, like sure, because I was trying to stay awake because it seemed like something was going to happen. But I was really tired, and so then I woke up and I was excited. I'll probably cut out that urinal part. Sorry, guys.
That's so bad.
Let's see. Okay, so Lester isn't the only pitcher that the Cubs signed this week. So after trading him with Jeff Samardzija to the A's, the Cubs are bringing back Jason Hammel to the north side. And this time it looks like a deal that's a little bit more long-term, a little bit more than a sign-and-flip type deal, which, you know, like I just said, I kind of hope we're not done with those because, man, those are a lot of fun to watch. Like to see them bring in somebody and Bozzio just like work his magic. I kind of hope we're not done with those. But anyways,
no, what? I hope we're done with them. I mean,
I just want
a lot more fun to watch.
Can we just get like one a year though? I just want like let's reserve the number 5 spot for the Bozzio project.
It's not.
maybe it's a modified version of it.
Yeah. You know?
And like I said, it's still the 1 year contract. It's still pretty low.
Right, but 1 year, like, $5 million. You, like, who's gonna get
right? It? If this works out, instead of trading, you will pay you.
Yeah,
you know, we'll sign you the next time instead of flipping you. So, I don't know. I think they're pretty much done.
Well, anyways, so this is not a sign and flip deal. So the Cubs gave Hammel a 2-year, $18 million deal that includes a club option for a third year, and Hammel coming back really isn't a huge surprise. I think I seem to remember him mentioning that he would be interested in coming back to the Cubs before he was traded. I think it was, you know, it was common sense. He was going to be traded around the, you know, in July or whatever, leading up to the trade deadline. But I think he kind of indicated he would like to come back. So I think we knew that this was a, you know, a good possibility. But it was,
that's what you call keeping your bridge intact instead of burning it.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I think that that's a good sign that he wanted to come back and that the Cubs wanted him back, because we've seen the Cubs do these Bozzio projects, and then wherever wherever they go, they don't pitch as well. And then you think, wow, we got him rid of him at, you know, just the right time. But I think that the fact that the Cubs brought Hamill back, I think Bozzio was able to work with him, and I think that they must, the Cubs must think that he can perform at that level again. So I think that's a, I think it's a good sign, and it's a good sign that he wanted to come back, because I don't think that's necessarily the case with Samardzija. And, I don't know. I think that, I think that it kind of shows us what the players think of what's going on, because there's been a little bit of a, it seems like, and we've kind of referenced this earlier, but with Samardzija, it seems like there's a little bit of a disconnect with how we see this rebuild working and how the front office sees it working, and then how some of the players do, you know? So I don't know.
You have to say the S word on the podcast. We're trying to keep this family friendly.
I think it's, you know, it's just kind of funny to see, like, I mean, I'm as big of a Samardzija fan as anybody, but I think that it's kind of funny to see him go somewhere where he thought he was going to compete. They didn't get any further. Well, they got one game further than the Cubs did. And now the Cubs are going like all out, ready to compete. And he's going to the White Sox, which are, you know, I mean, all signs show that they're trying to become competitive too. I just think it's less likely to happen there. I just think it'd be hilarious to see the Cubs like get into the playoffs and he's, you know.
Yeah, but I think he's more interested in the dollars at this point. I mean, he's still going to test free agency and after this year.
Right.
Unless the White Sox throw a ridiculous offer at him.
I don't think they can afford to. He knows
he's about to cash in.
Right. I think he'll end up with the Yankees. I think that's like the type of player that they would like, and they'll give him the most money. And I just, I don't think he's going to end up with the Cubs, although I would love to see it. But
I think that the idea of him returning to the Cubs is nearly zero at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to see it. I'm not saying I would, but, I really don't have any problem with him going to the White Sox. I mean, I think it would really sting if he went to the Cardinals, but I don't know. I kind of like the idea that he went to the White Sox, and I don't know. I hope it works out well for him there. So I think in kind of thinking about this Lester and Hamill addition this week, I think that it kind of takes a little bit of pressure off of Arrieta. Like, I was trying to think of how it impacts. Obviously, it impacts the starting rotation, because I think if you look at Cubs.com, the depth chart shows like 7 or 8 starters. So obviously it's going to impact the starting rotation. But I was thinking that, you know, the Cubs, they made it clear that they wanted to compete for the division in 2015. And if they didn't add it, like, those things were already said. And so if the Cubs weren't able to add anybody that made that more likely, that expectation was still going to be there with fans and probably with the team and everything. And I was thinking that if they weren't able to get Lester and they weren't able to get maybe Hamill or a pitcher better than Hamill, that would be a ton of pressure to put on Arrieta. But I think that now with having a rotation that includes Lester and Hamill, possibly more, I think it allows Arrieta not to worry. You know, he doesn't have to worry about being the workhorse and I guess the leader of the pitching staff.
Right. It's kind of hilarious that we had that question, you know, a couple of months ago about Arrieta being the day one guy, or if they bring in a free agent, or opening day guy, I'm sorry, will that guy be the ace or the opening day starter? And one question about that, Arrieta said, he's a guy you bring in, and he's been proven for a number of years. He's won championships. He's a legitimate, no questions asked, ace on the staff.
Right. Yeah.
Wasn't Arrieta an opening day starter with the Orioles?
I believe he was, yeah.
He was, yeah.
Yeah. But I just thought, like, and I mean, and it's not like Lester, or it's not like Arrieta is like a 24-year-old young guy, you know. It just seems, though, that still he was, I don't think it's necessary to put that much pressure on him. And maybe it's not that much pressure. I don't know. But I just think it really rounds out the pitching staff a lot more. And, man, I mean, the Cubs just have so many options with the rotation. So on top of Lester, Hamill, and Arrieta, right now there's also Kyle Hendricks, Travis Wood, Wada, Turner, DuBront, Jokic. Yeah. Guys, there's a Wada options.
I'm sure Wada's thinking, thank God I signed that when I did.
Yes, yeah. But I think that's good because it gives them depth in case of injury. And then I think it also gives them pieces to move in a trade for that big bat that they might be looking for this offseason or any other trades once the season starts.
Yeah, for sure. I'm looking forward to, I think Jacob Turner could be a good pitcher for the Cubs going forward. I hope that guy succeeds.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
Now, Jokic, on the other hand, I don't care how he does.
Yeah, I don't care. I hope that guy fails. No, I'm just kidding. JK, I would never wish misfortune on a player like that.
While we're still on the topic of Hamill, can we just stop and look at how Theo and Jed appeared to have just schooled Billy Bean on that trade?
They did, but I'm going to actually sort of slightly... not really take the other side, but put yourself in those shoes. Like,
right.
He thought they were, the way they were performing the first half of the season, he knew he was selling out, but he thought he was selling out for the ultimate prize.
Right.
You know, it's
right. I think it's
pick him apart now, but like that was his shot to win it all.
Right. I mean, it's a combination of things not working out for them in 2014 and the fact that he sold out the future for that. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's like, I think if the A's won the World Series, then it would be, we would perceive that as being more of an even trade, you know? Mm-hmm. But, I was thinking about this and then I saw it on Twitter last night. It was whenever I refer to something on Twitter, I can never remember who said it, so I can't give them credit for it, but I wrote this down so I wouldn't forget it, but it's at Brett Johnson 9. And he said, Theo Epstein stole Billy Bean's ace pitcher, number four pitcher, top prospect, and former top pitching prospect last year. So, I mean, look what the A's are doing now. I mean, like, they're in, like, a crazy rebuild I don't think I've ever seen before and doing weird things. But, I mean, they just had to start from scratch, basically. And it's nice to be on the – even if there was some luck involved – or misfortune involved for the A's. It's nice to have come out on top.
And I've heard, you know, Theo and Jed, I've heard him say multiple times, like, they're always watching for what they call market inefficiencies or, you know, things like that. And that's their goal, is to take advantage of things like that. And so you have to give them credit for seizing that opportunity. Like, hey, I think we can really take this guy. Like the kid on the playground that you knew didn't know what he had in his baseball card stack, you know, you take advantage of him. Yeah. Like, I never did that, but
we called him.
Sure, you guys did.
When I traded baseball cards, I called that kid Andy. Andy, how many times did Paul rip you off?
Oh, yeah, quite a number of times, I'm sure.
Andy was just stockpiling.
Did he tell you about it after he did
now
it?
Now he's laughing all the way to the bank with his investment money.
Andy was stockpiling Vance Law cards like they were going out of style.
Oh yeah, right. I don't know if I ever owned a Vance Law card. But Bip Roberts, on the other hand.
you did have a shit ton of Bip Roberts cards. I think you filled a whole book with them. 89 Bip, 89 tops Bip Roberts. Yeah. I can see it right now.
No, 87 Wood Grain.
All right. Well, we kind of mentioned him already, but after not being able to sign Russell Martin at the price that the Cubs wanted, they booked or they booked. What am I trying to say? Looked. Sorry. Looked at. Man, I got totally thrown off there. What am I trying to say? They looked at their other options, secondary options. Let's go with that. They traded with the Diamondbacks for an all-star catcher, Miguel Montero.
Yeah, Miguel Montero, the 31.154-year-old catcher. I think that's hilarious when you look on Baseball Reference. It has their age like to the hundredth decimal or whatever. So he's 31.154 years old. He was traded to the Cubs yesterday for minor league pitcher Zach Godley, and he was a 10th round pick in 2013. He's made it up to the to Daytona as far as the Cubs system is concerned, and then also they sent Jefferson Mejia over in this trade as well, and he was an international Dominican signee in 2013, and he played in the Arizona Fall League most recently. But as far as Montero is concerned, he hits lefty, even though he throws righty, which is the opposite of me. I throw lefty and I hit righty. So I feel like I can relate to this guy. But it seems like he and Wellington would make a good platoon if the Cubs, you know, if the guys decide to hang on to Wellington. So, of course, like right after the move, there were rumors that the Cubs were shopping Wellington, but Theo, like, almost immediately came in and did his best to kind of quell those rumors that he really liked the way that these two catchers fit together. Because I guess ostensibly, Montero would be batting against righties, and then Wellington would be batting against lefties, would be playing in games against lefty starters. So it does seem like that's a pretty good scenario. But
it'd be nice if that's how it stands this year, and they do kind of platoon those guys. It's nice to have, you know, we're so used to like the backup catcher that literally cannot hit the ball. And so it's nice to not that we have two catchers that are fairly equal offensively.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Montero can hit the ball. We've seen that firsthand. But one thing we know is that the Cubs got their veteran catcher, who's a good receiver / framer of pitches. And you know, that's important, you know, now in light of having John Lester and all these other pitchers. In these younger pitchers, but in Montero's 9-year career, he's been an all-star twice, which you already mentioned, and
was his last year, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he's a career .264 hitter, and he does have a little power. He's been in the double digits for home runs 5 out of the last 6 years. He does come at some cost. I mean, his contract runs through 2017. He's owed $40 million, and the Cubs are going to take on all of that cost. So they shipped over a couple of low-level minor league pitchers, and they're paying him a pretty good chunk of money to have that veteran presence. By all accounts, he's a pretty good leader, and so that's something that they're going to expect him to continue with the Cubs as well. One other thing that people are worried about with Montero is he going to have any effect on Schwarber's emergence through the minors and up to the big leagues? And really, it seems like through 2017, it kind of fits the timetable of Schwarber, where, you know, if Schwarber is able to stay at the catcher position and plays well there, you know, 2017 seems to be a reasonable timetable for him to come up to the big league team. So that's the other big question, I guess, that people have had with the Montero signing.
Yeah, I want to go back and talk a little bit. Andy, you mentioned his pitch framing abilities. And so I looked into that a little bit. I was kind of curious about it. And so I was at statcorner.com. It seems like they have some pretty good.
Down on the corner?
Stat
corner. Or is it out on the street?
No. Okay. They seem like they had some pretty good pitch framing statistics and stuff like that. So they ranked Montero as the best pitch framing catcher in baseball. 9.3 of pitches thrown outside of the strike zone were called for strikes with him. So about almost 10%. So then in looking at the pitch framing rankings, Wellington Castillo was ranked second to last for all catchers in baseball in pitch framing. So that includes backups and anybody who caught in 2014. So Montero was ranked number one in 2014 and Castillo was ranked number 111.
Wow.
Wow. Dang.
That's
Castillo ranked worse than Coy Hill.
That is really interesting because like it's so easy to look at catchers like on a paper and say like, oh, they hit about the same and like they're, you know, but it's such the, you know, catching of all positions is just so much more than that. It's like the offense is a nice bonus. So
right.
Yeah, for them to land a guy that's, I didn't even know he was the best.
Yeah.
I knew he was good, as better and good, pretty good, but
and pitch,
you know, to land a guy that's that much better. And also you don't lose anything in offense. I think that's
right.
That's your goal.
Right. But I mean, it makes, you know, it makes your pitchers better. It's, you know, I mean, I don't have to talk about why it's good to have somebody that can frame pitches. Look at Molina catch for the Cardinals. You can see that just in playing them, you can see what the difference that makes. But I know that's something, I mean, obviously we're starting, you know, pitch framing has been, you know, discussed for a while, but I think that as those stats become more readily available and, you know, I think it's going to be one of those things that teams value more and more. And I think it was pretty clear that that's what the Cubs were looking for in Russell Martin. And when he wasn't available, they looked, you know, they went and got Montero. And in looking at what they're paying for Montero and what they would have paid for Martin and looking at the time frames and everything, honestly, I think that Montero, I mean, I'm perfectly content with, I'm not saying that Montero is better than Russell Martin, but dollar for dollar, I think they're probably in a good spot.
I could probably get on board with that mindset.
Yeah. Thanks. That means a lot to me, Andy. So just overall, like, I don't know. First off, it was really fun to have so many moves to talk about this week, but in looking at who they signed, I was just thinking that it's really nice to hear the Cubs be in the discussion again. You know, the winter meetings and the off seasons have been pretty dull for us the last few years. And the players that the Cubs did sign in the off season, they were not exciting players. And, you know, they were those sign and flip contracts that we were talking about. And it's been a lot of fun this off season to follow the Cubs from Joe Maddon to Lester and Montero and just this discussions. And it's definitely a more active off season and I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
It's been a long time coming for us. Like, as you said,
right. This is the most exciting pre-Christmas episode. We probably had a very long time. It's also interesting to watch the national media, like, try to jump on this, like they're savants, you know, like the Cubs are coming and, you know, the Cubs are the sleeping giant, like you read. And it's like, yeah, I guess. And that's a fun story. But if you didn't see it coming and you're a national sports writer,
but the funny thing is there were so many people that couldn't see this coming 6 months ago or four months ago. You know, it wasn't. Yeah.
Three dudes in their basements.
Like all the Red Sox fans.
We're not that smart. Okay.
No right.
offense, guys.
All the Red Sox fans tweeting to John Lester like you'll never, like, you'll, good luck with the last 6 years of your career. You'll never win a World Series or even sniff the playoffs. Like, there's so many people out there who still think still just discount the Cubs because of the Cubs.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because they're the Cubs, because of where they've been in the standings the last few years. And you really have to, I mean, I guess you do have to follow baseball quite a bit to know. Well, I don't know. I don't think you have to follow baseball that much to know what the Cubs are doing. And I mean, I don't follow, just because of I don't have the time, I don't follow a lot of the other teams in baseball, but I have a general idea of what organizations are, you know, what stage they're at, or you know, what their plan is. You know, I don't think you have to like really dig in too deep to realize that stuff, but I don't know. Okay, so we have I guess one more topic here. Not quite as impactful, but there was some news since our last episode on players that the Cubs have tendered and non-tendered. So Kurt, tell us, yeah. Kurt, about this very tender situation.
Yeah, I'll tell you about the tenderizing.
That's a dad joke right there, or a Vicodin joke. I'm not sure which.
There's so many good show titles. Just spew it out here. But anyways, yeah, there were 10 arbitration eligible players. 8 were tendered contracts, and 2 were not. Those that were tendered contracts were Wellington Castillo, Pedro Strop, Felix Dubron, Justin Ruggiano, Chris Coughlin, and Luis Valbuena, Travis Wood, and Jake Arrieta. And so what that means is they have until the deadline in February to negotiate a contract. Otherwise, they go to arbitration. The guys that were non-tendered were John Baker and Wesley Wright. So those guys are free agents and can do whatever the hell they want.
Right. Then they can also come back. I mean, we could see...
Seems unlikely that John Baker's coming back, but
yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, they could offer a minor league deal with a spring training invite or whatever, we'll get to kind of follow those contracts as they develop here, you know, between now and that deadline in February, right? Isn't that what you said?
Yeah. I suppose Travis Wood maybe is the more.
Right.
One of the more interesting stories of that, like, what, you know, he was tendered a contract, and now where is he gonna land now that you have a lefty at the top of the rotation? Plus, you signed WADA. You know, you're not gonna have three. All three of those guys aren't gonna be in the rotation.
Yeah. And then, I guess it wasn't just players that the Cubs brought in last week, this last week, but we saw some hiring done. For the coaching staff and the front office too.
Yeah, they brought in a key Harry Carey impressionist to just entertain everybody, and that would be Ryan Dempster.
What if he's the reason that Lester decided to sign with the Cubs?
You know what? He came out publicly and kind of downplayed that notion and saying that it was all, I think he was quoted as saying it was all Theo and Judd. Not really anything to do with him, but of course he perhaps could have been just being modest, but at any rate, he signed a 1-day contract to retire a Cub, and then his job is special assistant to Theo and Judd. And so, according to several articles, his job is to check in on minor leaguers throughout the year, to work with players in spring training, evaluate prospects for the draft, and scout. So just kind of whatever Theo and Judd need, I guess. And this gives him a chance to be back in Chicago where he makes his home. And so it just seems like it makes a lot of sense because people see him as having a lot of great baseball knowledge and would be a good guy to have, you know, even just there as I just had the thought that, oh, we can see Ryan Dempster at spring training, you know, but it'd be good for him to be there at spring training, you know, teaching all the young pitchers to flutter their gloves and what have you. But no, in all seriousness though, I think this was a good move and good to bring him into the fold. And then also the
I
rest
don't think
the,
it's a I will think it's a good idea if I never see him or hear him.
Wow.
Then I'll think it's a great idea.
Dang, shots fired a little bit there. Anyway, so there's that. And then the rest of the coaching staff was finalized. And the most notable thing is that most of the staff that was going to be here under Renteria was still kept in-house. However, several people were shifted around. because Dave Martinez, former Cub and Madden's bench coach with the Rays for seven seasons, was hired as the bench coach for the Cubs. And so that displaced Brandon Hyde, who was last year's bench coach, and he's going to be first base coach. So where does that leave Eric Hensky? I'm glad you asked. He is going to be the assistant hitting coach now. And so also Doug DeCenzo, who is going to be the first base coach. I mean, what does he do now? Well, he is the outfield and base running coordinator. So, they're just kind of moving some people around, but we have the old cornerstones and the old standbys, like Lester Strode will still be the bullpen coach. So just everybody relax. He's still there. And Chris Bosio will still be the pitching coach. So that's,
I feel like I should clarify myself when I said that as long as I never see or hear him, then I'll be okay with it. I meant, I don't have anything personal against Ryan Dempster. I just don't really want to see him be like in the spotlight at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it doesn't really seem like he's going to. I mean, did you get that impression?
I don't know. I mean, he seems like he was in the spotlight when he was on the team. I just don't want to hear Harry Carey impressions anymore. Let's just.
Yeah. Well, maybe that was a mistake on my part to focus on that, but I really don't think that's,
yeah.
I think
he probably has some spotlight. I think he has some things that he can probably bring. You know, it's not a bad
idea. Of course he does. How could you deny his baseball and his pitching expertise?
I don't know. I just don't want to hear Harry Carey impressions anymore. I don't want him to if he can stick to baseball stuff and stay off, you know, when we have a Saturday afternoon Fox broadcast, I don't want to see Ryan Dempster. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I really don't think you will. I think he'll show up on the fringes every once in a while, and it really won't be that intrusive.
He'll be a big Cubs convention piece, I bet.
I think the reality is he just needed a job so he could stay in the U.S. and he had to go back to Canada. He's like, hey, guys, can you help me out here?
Oh, man, that hurts so bad.
Canada.
All right.
So anyway, that's all I have on the staff.
All right. Okay. Well, we typically answer listener questions in our episodes, but just because of the number of topics for tonight's episode, we knew it was going to go long. I have a couple, and we'll save them for Sunday night. This upcoming Sunday night, we'll have our next episode. But if you have questions that you would like for us to answer on the podcast, you can tweet them to us at IVMV on Twitter, or you can leave them on our Facebook page. It's IVMV.com/Facebook. And the day that we record, I usually ask for questions on there, and then you can leave them in the comments section, or you can email them to me, Corey, Corey, at IVMV.com. In case you didn't hear the last episode, we now have shirts available, t-shirts and hoodies. And you can check them out and order them at ivmv.com/store. So I've placed the initial order, and if you ordered a shirt in the last week, hopefully, I'm hoping to get them back from the print shop, here pretty soon. And so we'll get them in the mail. It shouldn't be too much longer. I've heard that they have a pretty quick turnaround there, and it's been a week. So hopefully we'll get them soon. But yeah, I don't know. Kurt, you did a good job with those shirts. I want to say that. That logo looks really good on that shirt.
Thanks. The logo is more of the work than the t-shirt, but I'm glad it looks good.
Yeah. So, yeah, those are cool shirts. And I think I made some comment when I posted on Facebook about how you can wear it to a Cubs game, and then you know who it's safe to make a Chuck Mangione reference to, or a horsey sauce joke. Just bringing Cubs fans together.
You could get some stencil letters, put your name on the back.
right. Somebody, I want to see somebody put get those iron-on things, and on the back of the shirt the it says, ones? Yeah, and on the back of the shirt it says bacon cheeseburger. All right. So before we get into the internet muscle flexes, in this last podcast episode that we did, we talked about the first ever Cubs blogger forum. that I attended. And if you haven't heard that yet, go back and listen. It's episode number 6.47. I thought it was a good discussion on kind of the business side of what the Cubs are doing right now. I talked about the forum that I was able to participate in and the Cubs with the Cubs front office and other bloggers. Anyway, one of the outcomes of that bloggers forum was that we were able to secure two tickets for the 30th Cubs convention to give away to listeners of our podcast. And Cubs convention is next month. It's January, I think it's 16th through 18th, I believe. Andy and I, we're going up with our wives. And Kurt, you're still not going. Is that correct?
Well, I didn't know your wives were going. Now I'm going.
It changes things.
I did not know there would be women.
No, I'm stuck here with a newborn.
You mean you get to play? You get to fill the role of being a father. That's what you mean. You don't not. I'm stuck here with a kid.
Nope, I'm stuck here.
It's going to be my first Cubs convention. It's your first one too, isn't it, Andy?
Yeah, first one.
Yeah, and I don't know, just based on the events of this offseason, I'm really excited for this event. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, heck yeah.
It's going to be fun, and you know, there's going to be a lot of other, you know, if you're big on you know, Cubs Twitter and everything like that, obviously there's going to be a lot of people, and we haven't really talked about it yet, but if there's not a general kind of Cubs Twitter meetup type thing, maybe we'll try to organize something just to get people together. So if you're going, be on the lookout for that. But we would like you to go. And so here's what we're going to do. We have two tickets to give away. We're not going to do anything boring like a random drawing or anything like that. So to enter this contest, you need to email us your answer to the following question. Who would you bring with you to Cubs convention and why? And so email your answer to Corey@IVMB.com, Corey@IVMB.com. And the cutoff is Saturday, December 20th at midnight Central Time. And we will probably read a few of our favorite entries and then read the winner on the podcast that next night, Sunday, December 21st. So again, tell us who you would bring with you to Cubs convention and why, and email your entries to Corey@IVMB.com. And we'd like to thank the Cubs for making these passes available to us. So, internet muscle flexes. You guys said you don't have any, right?
No, I did want to share very briefly, though, that kind of a funny thing that the Red Sox fans. Why are you laughing?
I had to put on a little Children of Sanchez.
Oh yes. The Red Sox fans have launched a fake smear campaign against Lester on Twitter. It's kind of a ripoff of the Hunter Pence poster campaign, but some of them are pretty funny. I'll just read a couple. This one from Dave says, Lester bombards all his Facebook friends with Candy Crush invites. And then another one, John Lester picked a kicker first in his draft. It's hashtag smear campaign. So they're pretty funny. And I think for the most part in trying to have a little fun and not be too crazy.
I will add to your discussion of Lester, and that I looked at his man, that Chuck Mangione is distracting me. But
is it loud for you guys?
Just a little bit, but he spent hours tonight just responding to the tweets of fans.
Yeah, I saw that.
Like every minute, he was writing a response to the tweets of fans, and not just Cubs fans, Boston fans as well. Just kind of trying to. You know, trying to like temper their frustration a little bit, and it just seems like he's good with the fans is the impression I got based on looking at his Twitter timeline.
And it wasn't just like a couple. It was like, it must've been like everybody that tweeted at him, Cubs fans and Red Sox fans. He responded to and was very classy.
Yeah. I just thought I'd mention that cause I really liked what I saw there.
Yeah. All right, so here are the internet muscle flexes, and These are comments that we pull from the Cubs.com message board and other message boards and articles and comment areas and stuff. And it's just, you know, commenters being commenters, doing their thing. So this one is from the story on Baez going to Puerto Rico for the Winter League. And the commenter says, "Oh, man, I would love to go somewhere like Puerto Rico for the winter. Hey, Cubs, is there anything I can do to help? I speak a little Spanish, 4 years of high school honors AP, but I didn't really study that hard." So these next ones, these are all from the article about John Lester signing with the Cubs. Okay, so the first person, Red Sox fan, says, "Good riddance, Lester. I'm looking forward to you striking out every time you're at bat. Lester isn't a top 15 in the league pitcher. There are plenty of terrific pitchers the Red Sox can go after still." Then someone says, comments back and says, "Bitter much?" And then the person says, "All the time. Plus, I never liked Cancer Boy anyways."
What?
Yeah. So John Lester had cancer at one point.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
And to go along.
Cool.
Well, they don't like Rizzo either, apparently.
Right. So to go along with that, here's the last one. I guess I only had a couple, but the last one is, again, from that same article. And this person says, "Even God couldn't help this franchise win a World Series. Good luck, chemo boy."
What?
Boy. Those are some serious trolls.
Holy crap. I'm taken aback. Like, the internet, the vitriol of the internet rarely surprises me, but I'm surprised.
Yeah. Boston's got its own special breed of internet trolls, I guess.
Yeah. We should have a RedSox.com muscle flex.
Yes.
It's mostly death threats.
Right. "I hope your next chemo round doesn't work, asshole."
Oh my God.
Oh, man.
Crazy stuff. Isn't that nuts?
Yeah.
"I hope your Vicodin wears off in the middle of the night."
"I hope you can't find your urinal in the dark tonight." Oh, boy. All right. Well, that does it for this week's episode. We're going out on a high note tonight. Don't forget that if you shop on Amazon, go to ivmv.com/Amazon. No, don't do that. Go to ivmv.com and then click on the Amazon button on the right side of the page to make your purchases. It doesn't cost you anything extra, and Amazon gives us a percentage of your purchase, and that helps us pay the podcast bills and keep this whole thing going. This episode was brought to you by the Hall of Fame level contributors to our Patreon campaign. A special thanks to our associate producers, Joshua, Anthony, and Matthew. And thanks to the other Hall of Fame contributors, Jeremy, Dave, Dallas from Australia, Charles, Andrew, Jane, Tony, Shane, and Michael from Colorado. And I had the opportunity to meet Michael from Colorado this week. So that was really cool. We had lunch at the Beer Stube. I don't know if I've ever eaten a meal at the Beer Stube before. But ate there and then made a quick...
Sausages.
Yeah. I think I had a grilled cheese.
Oh, yeah, you don't eat sausages.
Yeah. And then we made a quick pit stop at Bent River for some Jingle Java. So, but Michael, we talked about it throughout the month of November. He's given away the Ryan Sandberg and Greg Maddux rookie cards for his Movember campaign to benefit Voices for Peru. And we did the drawings for the cards, and we have not shared who won which cards. And we're going to do that on the next episode, just because this one was so jam-packed. We didn't want it to go any longer than it needed to. So we'll do that on Sunday night. But thanks to everyone that helps us by contributing to our Patreon campaign. If you enjoy our podcast, you can help us greatly by checking out the Patreon campaign. And you're able to pledge support to us. And the pledging levels start as low as just $1 a month. And that's not even a cup of coffee. And Your $1 a month makes a huge difference to us, so don't think that it's too small of an amount. It would help us a lot. We've got some equipment upgrades to do, and it's really easy to do Patreon. And I think I forgot to mention there's perks at every level, so IVMB stickers, posters, pint glasses, all sorts of stuff. And then from time to time, we do extra giveaway drawings in there. And I do have some stuff. I've been cleaning the basement. I have some Cubs memorabilia type stuff to give away. So we'll be doing more of that here in the next couple months. So to check that out, go to patreon.com/IVMB. That's patreon.com/IVMB. And because this episode came out late this week, you only need to wait a few more days for another episode. And the way that this week has gone, I'm guessing the Cubs will continue to give us quite a few things to talk about. So thanks for downloading this week's episode, and thanks to everyone that showed up to watch it live. And until Sunday night, go Cubs!